soon as you're born, they make you feel small. By giving you no time instead of it all.
Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, editor of MERS, with Jack Spencer and Jacob Kanzler. Guys, we had a little bit of news over the weekend with Sri Tanadar, which is, I'm going to start here just because I find it very interesting. His campaign manager posted on Facebook yesterday afternoon that he was, quote, profiled, arrested, and brutalized when he was taken under arrest after he claims that he was trying to intervene on behalf of a 12 and 13-year-old girl who is being questioned by police for some incident that he doesn't really go into. And then he writes, quote, the police officer went berserk, grabbed me, arrested me, no questions allowed, I suppose, didn't read me my rights, didn't tell me why I was under arrest, nothing. Sri Tanadar posted at midnight, I wholeheartedly support my campaign manager, David Alexander Bullock. Every day, many African-American men go through such traumatic and humiliating experience for no fault of theirs. A pastor of the church has every right to ask questions about the well-being of the members of his church. I have a lot of respect for Reverend David Bullock and will proudly defend him. I demand a thorough investigation of the actions of the officers involved in this terrible incident. Jacob, I bring this up because Sri Tanadar, in an attempt to try and connect with Detroit, brought him on board a few weeks ago. And at the time, I think that there was a little bit of head scratching here because he doesn't have necessarily a reputation here in town of getting things done. He's a bit adversarial without any type of results maybe to show for it.
I don't have a long history about David Bullock, but I do know that, to kind of back up your point, he was behind one of the Snyder recall efforts, which of course is a monumental task. There were a lot of promises made, but not a lot of promises kept with that. So that's kind of one example from his resume of kind of what you said there.
I'm not quite sure. I mean, to bring on this type of character who gets involved in these kind of things, does this help him connect to Detroit, or what kind of impact could this possibly have?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's very difficult to tell what does and doesn't connect with Detroit's one of those places that, like the UP, where you're never sure exactly what the politics are going to work there, that your first reaction is, wait, what's that going on here? This isn't going to do any good. And then surprisingly, it may or it may not. So I don't know about that. But I do think the history of this Bullock is one where you definitely want to put it down and say, okay, this is one where we want to hear the rest of the story at some point.
Right.
Because the initial part comes out and you go, okay, well, let's see if the policeman had tape of it himself, because police are doing that more and more, and let's see what this, you know, whether this has any traction or what this actually looks like maybe a week from now.
Because this could be a complete distraction for the Shriek campaign, that maybe the first day it is kind of innocuous, but down the road, does he want to connect himself with something like this? It could turn into a super distraction for him.
Or it could be one where, you know, it ends up creating some positive publicity in Detroit if it actually ends something to it. You know, here's somebody who gets mistreated and then he's coming to his aid, et cetera. But the problem with that, I think an awful lot of people are going to be pretty skeptical and say, boy, the timing of this is certainly, you know, fortunate if that's the truth.
Well, Sri did have a good performance during this Democratic forum, and it turned out to be a Democratic forum. It didn't start off that way in the city of Flint, where the Flint television station up there, the Fox affiliate, taped the Legislative Black Caucus gubernatorial forum, where they invited all of the candidates from both the Republican and Democratic Party. Only the Democratic ones showed up. Among those who showed up was Bill Cobbs, who is running now as a write-in, but he was given the full stage with everybody else. The forum was not unlike some of the other forums that we've seen with these four candidates. I would say Sri did a lot better in that one than he did the Wood TV one, where I think his performance was universally panned. He had a great abs, and he's very hit and miss on these forums. He's got one more to show for himself here. That probably talks to his inexperience, Jack, don't you think, in being able to successfully pull off one of these forums on a consistent basis.
Oh, yeah. The lack of experience is going to hurt you, no question about it. And in the other debate, the one was that Grand Rapids?
Yeah,
he was very stiff in a lot of ways. He seemed to talk and fill in dead, like he felt like he had to fill in time by just sort of going on and on. And I felt he didn't come out, he came out likable, but I didn't think he necessarily came out as looking like he was very prepared to be governor. But that may be a good way to explain this. Somebody who doesn't have the experience may hit his stride in one, and I didn't see this debate you're discussing, but he may have hit his stride in this one with the right question starting him out, etc., whereas in the next one or in the last one, it just doesn't come off.
It's very different contrast. He's only got one more debate that we know of that's going to be televised where he's going to be able to make one more impression. That one's going to be in the city of Detroit and arguably will be more impactful since a good number of the Democratic voters are going to be watching that Detroit debate. You would think that's where I would hazard to guess a majority of the Democratic votes are going to come from. Last week, Jacob, I would say that Brian Kelly had probably his best week as a gubernatorial candidate. He came out with an ad that shows support from a Larry Nassar survivor. Then he was at a press conference with Brooks Patterson, who has endorsed Bill Schuette, but is now with Brian Kelly when it comes to the no-fault insurance debate. This is significant because Brooks Patterson still has a lot of pull with those Republicans in Oakland County. He's been able to hold off any type of meaningful no-fault insurance reform, Jacob, for years and years and years. He was able to do that. He had the budget signed. All in all, a pretty good week, but is it going to matter that much?
Well, that's a good question. I think we were talking about the Survivor ad. How is it going to play with people? My thinking on this is the ad with Kaylee Lorentz and Rachel Denhollander, although apparently only Kaylee Lorentz has given a formal endorsement of Kelly. My guess is, unless that is contested in some way, and if someone says, you know, Kelly, you're playing politics with these survivors, maybe that will be a backfire. But I don't know if anyone is going to have the guts or anything to even say that. So left uncontested, I think maybe this plays well with the general audience.
I think he's got to reach out to a different type of group of voter in order to win this campaign, Jack, because if you're going just for Republicans who right now are standing behind Trump come hell or high water, Kelly's not going to win this race. So this is an attempt to reach out maybe to that more moderate voter who, dare I say, is not neutral, but not impassioned to support Donald Trump. And if he can put enough money behind it, I could see it being very effective for him.
Well, he's doing everything he can. You got to give him a lot of credit for that. I mean, this is a situation where he has stayed in it and continually done things that have kept his name right up there within, you know, 13 or whatever it is points of Schuette, when people were, you know, basically writing Kelly off several weeks ago. I think it's going to be remembered as the one where Schuette followed Trump into a room someplace, got the endorsement, and I think that
she wrote.
That Trump endorsement is what's going to hold him up, and that's been his life preserver throughout the whole thing. And Kelly, you're going to have to give him A for effort on a lot of these things, you know, trying this and trying that and so on. But he's going to be given a lot of credit for staying in the way he has, but I think it's going to be a congratulations on a good second place finish.
You know, you've got to wonder if Jim Hines is on the right path here. And Jim Hines put out another video this morning that emphasizes how Donald Trump was not Bill Schuette's first pick, that Bill Schuette was the chair here in Michigan of the Jeb Bush campaign, and how Brian Kelly was not a Trump supporter. He was a supporter of Governor Kasich from Ohio, and that he, Bill Hines, was the original Trump supporter and has always been with Trump. Now, the video is very good, Jack, but like many other videos by Jim Hines, who's going to see it because he doesn't have any money behind it?
Yeah, he doesn't have any money at all, and so you don't get enough people seeing this. And if it was a situation where he had the money to put it out, it could be very effective. You know, similar situation to the other person in the race, Kolbeck. I mean, if Kolbeck had enough money to get his message out, you might actually get a real different dichotomy in the whole race between four people. But you basically have two candidates in here who actually, I think, have done pretty well in the debates, too.
Yeah, I would agree.
But they don't have the money, so it ends up coming down to the top two, and one of those people in the top two happens to have some extra help. And that's the, and again, the endorsement that Schuette got, which everybody nationally is watching how well Trump does in these races across the country. And don't kid yourself. There are a lot of voters out there who are just going to say, I'm going to vote for Trump because I don't want to see, you know, if they like Trump, I don't want to see the nightly news say Trump lost one someplace.
Isn't it amazing, Jacob, how Trump is still sucking the oxygen out of the room? Like, I'm not sensing a lot of excitement out there about any of the gubernatorial candidates here in Michigan, like maybe Granholm did, or you heard a little bit about Snyder and weren't his ads cool. I've heard a little bit about Shree's ads, but outside of that, Trump is still sucking the oxygen out of the political room.
Well, I think that's a good observation. I mean, I think the way that, you know, the news media is covering Trump, the way Trump is kind of going about his agenda, it is sucking a lot of the oxygen out of the room. And then I think the other factor here is, even though, you know, you have a candidate, you know, Bill Schuette, who is trying to be, you know, the Trump candidate, the reality is the front runners, if you will, Bill Schuette, Gretchen Whitmer, they're very much like you would expect, like that standard politician. They're both very polished. They both have a career in public service. These are the kind of gubernatorial candidates you would expect, but Trump was different. Trump was the one that garnered excitement because he was so different in so many ways, and we can go through that. So I think you're not seeing that excitement because Bill Schuette and Gretchen Whitmer aren't really that different candidate that we haven't seen run in any kind of circumstance before.
It does make you wonder, Jack, if Jim Hines had $6, $7 million to run those kind of ads up on TV, what this race would look like.
Oh, I think this race, again, you give money to the bottom two people in this race, and it's a whole different ball game. And then you really get into the idea of who's taking votes away from who, et cetera, et cetera. It would be a very, very different primary. That's where Callie would have more of a chance. Frankly, if you had the other two candidates possibly taking votes away from Schuette, you get the Snyder scenario that played out in 210, where, you know, with enough different people actively pulling votes, then you've got a better opportunity for Callie. Makes you wonder, maybe Callie's best play would have been to funnel some money to his, two of his competitors there.
It's room at the top, they're telling you still.
Join us now for the podcast is Steve Claywell. He's the president of the Michigan Building and Construction Trades Council. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Well, let's talk about the big news impacting the building trades here in the state of Michigan, and that was the repeal of the prevailing wage law. We've had it on the books for about 50 years. What are you hearing from members in regards to this? Because the talk here is in Lansing could be that, you know, this is a bit more symbolic than it is maybe realistic impact on people. But your folks were pretty fired up when the legislature put this up for a vote.
Yeah, and what we're hearing from our members is they're very, very disappointed. Obviously, at a time when we're trying to rebuild Michigan, only to be recognized somewhat for the skills and their abilities of the good work that they are doing in the state of Michigan, only for the representatives to cut the wages. And at a time that we're trying to attract not only the younger, but all Michiganders to be building tradesmen and women, to cut the wages and really discourage them from coming into a building trades career, only to know that wages are going to be cut. So what we're hearing from our members is they're very upset. And they're angry. They're angry that at a time when we've seen a boom in construction and we're able to put food on the table for their families and really do better, to essentially be betrayed, as the way many of our members have described it, to have the representatives cut their wages.
Now, talk about the number of folks who are in the building trades. We hear anecdotally that that number is going down. Are you guys seeing that as well?
We did have a period of time that we saw membership decrease. Now, obviously, with the opportunities, we're slowly regaining numbers, but you know, not at the rate that we would like or the opportunities. But I think that we've kind of bottomed out and we're starting to rebuild and add numbers.
Talk about your relationship with Governor Snyder. Obviously, he was not in support of this prevailing wage law repeal, and in fact has gone the other way and wanted to do this Marshall Plan, $100 million into trying to get more people trained into careers that are actually employing jobs right now. Would you say your relationship with the governor has been good, decent, okay?
I would say that our relationship with the governor has been one that has had its ups and downs. You know, obviously, we appreciate the governor not wanting the repeal of prevailing wage. And, you know, there's specific topics that we see and align with the governor on in trying to draw our youth into building trades, curriculums, and careers is something that, you know, we'll continue to work hand in hand with the governor. We applaud the effort of getting out to the young and reach them at a younger age to explain the opportunities and within the building trades in the state of Michigan. But, you know, how do we do it and what is the qualification and what are the rules that encompass the distribution of the funds is something that we'll continue to work with the governor on.
Is $100 million, it sounds like a ton of money. Is it a lot of money when we're talking about retraining people?
Well, that depends. What is the qualification? How are we going to distribute the money and how many people are we going to try to train? I think with anything, we have to be realistic of what we can get for the $100 million and essentially what is the qualification for people to qualify. So I think we need to see a little bit more of the structure of the Marshall Plan before we could really say, is the $100 million sufficient funds?
What do you guys think of Donald Trump?
Well, there's issues that we agree with the president on. There's many issues that we do not agree with the president on. He is our president, and I would say that a majority of our members disagree with policy that he's laid out and his approach. But he is our president. We'll continue to work with the president.
You got to like where he is on tariffs.
Well, it could be good or bad. Again, it depends on how it all unfolds. Obviously, some of the early decisions would definitely benefit some of our men and women working in the state of Michigan and abroad. But obviously, it all comes to the implementation.
Yeah, the president and the governor kind of seem like they've been on a roller coaster with you guys. So how does that impact endorsements? Because I know you guys have been playing endorsements in a lot of legislative and congressional districts. Have you given more consideration to Republicans than in years prior, or are you so tainted by what happened with prevailing wage that you're like, forget these guys?
Well, I think our endorsements, the way that we're looking at it this year is accountability. And the Michigan building trades men and women will support those that support us. And obviously, we have a group of people that agree with our members more than others. But I think our endorsement process is very simple this year. We support those that support us.
How many Republicans support you guys?
We've had a few. Obviously, that number, depending on the issue. But we, you know, as we saw with prevailing wage, we had 7 Republicans that supported the in the House that did not support the repeal. We had several in the Senate. And again, those individuals will consider that will be taken into consideration as we do our endorsements.
How many endorsements have you guys done? Are you doing them in waves or individual? How is that being done?
We're doing them kind of as the candidates have approached us. Obviously, we're getting influxes. Everybody is for endorsement, and the officers of the building trades are taking them individually. We're taking a group at a time, and then again, we're setting down, making a decision on what's the best decision for the men and women in the state of Michigan.
Have you endorsed any Republicans for Congress in Michigan?
We have not endorsed any Republicans. That's not to say that we won't. We have not at this time.
Okay. And how many Republicans in the legislature, roughly? 5, 10?
I would say that we're between 5 and 10 Republicans between the House and Senate that, again, are good on our issues and believe in the working men and women in the state of Michigan.
Is that up or down from years past? Do you know?
I really don't know because, again, you know, our kitchen table issues change by the year, and obviously that takes direct input from our members. So I really can't tell you if that's up or down.
Your members got to be kind of still ticked off, though. I mean, would you say that the prevailing wage vote outweighs what has happened with the Marshall Plan?
I would say that the prevailing wage really energized our members. We've seen the, last year where it's been a tax on all working men and women, not just the Michigan building trades. And I think that for our member, we've had health care, we've had education, and now we're attacking their wallets. I think that the repeal of prevailing wage has really energized our base, and we're definitely looking forward to November where we can have some accountability on behalf of our members.
And give our listeners a little bit of an idea. When you're talking about your members, who are you talking about? And put some numbers behind it.
Our members are the Michigan Building Trades men and women, which represent the building trades crafts in the state of Michigan. And we represent roughly 100,000 members in the state of Michigan.
And we're talking plumbers, carpenters.
We're talking plumbers, carpenters, electricians, cement masons, electricians, operating engineers, laborers, carpenters, all of the representatives of the building trades.
People who are in the building trades industry, roughly how many do you think are part of some type of organized labor union?
Again, I would say that, our membership currently is right around 100,000 for the state of Michigan that would be directly involved in the Michigan building trades.
Because I'm trying to think of how many people are not members of organized labor, would not do some type of prevailing wage agreement and, are going to try and take advantage of the new law. I mean, would you say maybe 50% aren't a member of the union?
Well, I think that's a really hard number, because when we talk about the prevailing wage, this wasn't just a union issue. We had many non-union employers that were not in favor of the repeal of prevailing wage. So to try to draw out the medium and larger contractors in the state of Michigan that did not support the repeal of prevailing wage would really be tough. So I think that number would vary, because obviously we'd have to ask each individual. But, I would say that's a really hard number to identify, because we don't know specifically where every contractor was on the repeal and what their current numbers are.
But surely there are people who are electricians or carpenters who are not part of some type of union, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
So you guys don't have any numbers on what that.
We don't have exact numbers. Obviously, we track our numbers, but to identify their numbers, we would be merely guessing.
So is the repeal for prevailing wage, what's kind of the next step for you guys? Is there any other type of step that you guys can take to try and reverse it? What's the battle plan?
Well, the next steps as we look at, the repeal of prevailing wage is the first step is that we would like to see some very accurate reporting on a yearly basis to find out what exactly the impact of the repeal is. And then the biggest issue that we're looking at as far as next steps is replacing the people in Lansing that supported the repeal of prevailing wage. That's truly our priority, making a difference in November and putting people in Lansing that support the men and women in the state of Michigan.
And that doesn't necessarily mean as far as like a referendum or any type of going to the public, that's on hold until the November elections.
Yeah, right now we're exploring any and all options, but our number one option right now is again to get the reporting to identify documentation that shows that the repeal of prevailing wage did not have the impact, it has not saved money, and then putting people in Lansing that support the working men and women in the state of Michigan.
Have you guys taken a look at the ballot proposal as passed as far as legality? Is there any avenue there? Did they screw up in drafting this thing?
We currently have legal counsel looking at it. We have not gotten a full report yet, but we do have individuals looking at the bill as it's written.
So there could be an opening there, but you could also be just doing your due diligence.
Well, I think it's both. Obviously, we owe it to the men and women in the state of Michigan to do our due diligence, but we also want to make sure that they did it right.
Do you have any indication that they didn't?
We have not gotten any reports from legal counsel at this time.
Anything else that you want to address about the state of the building trades right here in Michigan?
We're very thankful for the work that we currently have in the state of Michigan. It's unfortunate that the repeal of prevailing wage happened at a time when we were afforded an opportunity to really demonstrate our talents and how we build Michigan. And the Michigan building trades is strong, and we will overcome this minor setback and continue to build the state of Michigan.
Oh, one more question that came to my head here. What did you think of Matty Maroon putting up an ad for Donald Trump telling him to reverse the presidential permit on the Gordie Howe Bridge?
Well, obviously with any issue, there's a lot of working pieces to that. So I think we'll all stay tuned and see how that unfolds.
Obviously, you don't want that to come to pass.
you know, we're definitely watching it. We're looking at it, but I'm sure there's a lot more pieces to identify.
Guys, resilient if nothing else, aren't they?
Yeah, they've got some time on their hands.
Thanks a lot. Steve Claywell, he is the president of the Michigan Building and Construction Trades Council. Appreciate your time on the podcast today.
Thank you very much.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Thanks to Jack and Jacob, and thank you, AT&T, for sponsoring this on all our other podcasts. And AT&T was also one of the sponsors of the Electoral Guide and Almanac, which I'm proud to say is going to be coming out very soon. I got a special message from the boss, John Roerink, saying that we may actually have physical copies by Thursday, just a few. And we can take a look at all of our handiwork, and I know John is glad to be done with it. Jack, how many bios you think you did for that thing? Take a guess.
I have no idea how many. 50.
50? You think it was 50. How many do you think you did, Jacob?
Oh, I feel inadequate. It's probably in the 30 to 40 range. Probably close to the 30. I don't know.
Oh, geez. Boy, I was going to go a little bit north of that, guys. I was thinking about you must have done more. You had to have done more than 50.
The way we did it was truncated, where you were doing your regular work, and then you'd pick it up. The way I was doing a lot of it on Fridays. I was doing a lot of phone calls on weekends.
Yeah.
And it was odd because you start so early when you do that, that there are a lot of people who aren't even ready yet and they don't respond. Mm-hmm. And so you're maybe given 20 of them and you maybe come up with 17 and there are three that didn't respond and you say, this is the best I can do. You send it back and then you end up being revisited a month later these three people, I just got two emails from two of those three people that I didn't think were ever going to answer me. So it's harder to keep track. I can tell you there are a lot of very interesting candidates this year.
There are a lot of very interesting candidates. I like the Electoral Guide and Almanac. They sit on my desk. I got every single one we've done here in the office. I got a set at home as well. And if anybody wants the 2016 Electoral Guide and Almanac, we can hook you up with boxes. We still got a few boxes in the kitchen here that we can give you. If you want to come by the office, we'll give you as many boxes as you want. 910 West Ottawa. John will be very grateful. That's the 16 one, not the 18 one. The 18 one, like I said, we're going to get a few next week, and that's going to be very exciting.
And full disclosure, some of this you say is work, but I'll tell you, there were several times when once you get talking to somebody, you could have got the actual job done and got the information and taken it in 5 minutes, but they were so interesting that you end up talking to them for half an hour. And that I don't know if that really qualifies as work or not, but it's kind of nice to be able to have that kind of connection and to have that personal interest in, wow, I really enjoy talking to this particular person.
I found that too. I talked to one candidate who I think I was the first person she talked to all day, and she didn't want to get off the phone with me. And then I turned one of them into a story. Brenda Jones is a legislative candidate running in Southeast Michigan as a Republican. And, she doesn't really have much shot. I think she's running the Hunyang Hopgood seat or something like that. Well, anyway, because she's got the same name as the Detroit City Council candidate who's running for Congress, she's mistaken for Brenda Jones all the time. So I just turned that into a story just because it was so interesting. But yes, great. It's a great read. If you haven't ordered it yet, 517-482-2125. You can ask for Vicki. We can get you hooked up. 517-482-2125. Put a lot of work into it, and it's a great resource to have around. Maybe, this election, but, 2, 4, 6, 8 years later, you see somebody and you're wondering, God, did they run in that district? You can pull it up and see their profile, see their old pictures. It's a great resource. So with that, I'm going to close the book on this podcast. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.
Want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.